This is Claire Coyne. I'm interviewing Lisa Benjamin on the 10th of November 2014 in her home in Aberdare Gardens in Northwest London. So, Lisa, I've introduced you, but if I could ask you to introduce yourself as well, please.
Well, I'm Lisa Benjamin, and I've lived in this house since before I was born, in 1934. And I still intend to live here.
That's great, because I was going to ask you, my next question was, what year were you born?
So yes, that's lovely. No, I'm not hiding it.
And that's perfect. And if you could just, in brief, just one sentence really, tell me what your mother and father did during their adult working lives.
My father was in Shell Petroleum, and my mother had been a dancer and actress until she married my father, but before that. And that's them, and perhaps why I have a theatre love.
Wonderful. And did you go to school around here?
Yes, up at near Hampstead Heath, amongst other places.
Okay, and again in one sentence, because we'll probably come back to it later, but your main occupation in your working life?
It's costume design at the BBC.
Fantastic, thank you. So we'll go straight to the Temple of Mithras visit. So if you're able to describe what your overriding impression was of your visit.
It's quite tricky now after 60 years, but I remember going and it was a sort of mud patch with bricks and things, and Dr. Grimes showed us the head, I think it was, and I seem to remember it had a sort of curved temple over it. Now, I'm not sure, but you know your memory plays tricks. And we didn't have to queue up or anything. We just would take. And I cannot remember how we got there.
So it sounds like you had a wonderful visit, even if your memory, understandably, is going to have patches to it. It's going to be hazy in patches. But you said you were showed around by Dr. Grimes.
Yes.
And how did that come about?
Well, because I was at the Kensington Palace. It was then the London Museum. It was its sort of... It had been at Lancaster House before the war, which is where it was started. Now, somebody like Lord Leverhulme, one of those people, had founded it. It was at Lancaster House. Then after the war, everything was put into store, I believe. And after the war, it was, for some reason, put into Kensington Palace, which is where I came across it. Well, I didn't come across it, but worked there. And Dr. Grimes was the boss. And therefore, I think he was so proud of finding this temple. I don't know that he actually physically found it, but he was in charge. I think he must have decided it'd be nice for the staff to go and see it, which we did. Oh, God.
Can I ask you to take your bracelets off? Is that okay? Oh, well done. Thank you very much.
Just with difficulty.
Sorry about that.
My earrings don't clank.
They don't, no. Thank you. So, okay. So, yes, I'm sure he would have been very excited to invite people from the museum down there. Does that mean you can remember who you went with?
I think it was with Arthur Trotman, who in these days would be called a conservator, but in those days he was called a craftsman, like I was, junior craftswoman. And I think this boy who was, I think, a junior craftsman, Alfred Rook, I think his name was. I can't remember the second part. And probably some other members. But they were the two. Oh, and there was another man who was the carpenter. Oh, Gillander. Somebody Gillander. That was his name. And I think we were all taken together. Now, how we got there, I don't know. Whether we were put in a cab or we went by public transport. I cannot remember those details. But that was it. And I think at that time, probably there weren't any other people but the people working on the site there. I don't remember people en masse. And perhaps it hadn't had the publicity at that point. I don't honestly remember. And in those days, I didn't keep press cuttings of anything.
That's no problem. I think the fact that you say there weren't really any other people around could be to do with the fact that the publicity might have started, that machine might have got going, but it wasn't open to the public, the site, until 4:30 in the afternoon. So if you'd gone during the day,
there was nobody
they would have perhaps been queuing up outside, poor things.
And I seem to remember it was all in the open. There might have been a tarpaulin over it, but I seem to remember it wasn't undercover as such, you know. it was the site itself with all the mud, and I think the archaeologists probably digging and things. But I don't remember it being put in a tent or anything.
No, you're right. That makes sense. And certainly that's what...
And we didn't make a fuss of archaeology then. Not like today, you know. So I think it is possible that we were just, you know, taking... I have a peculiar feeling that we were asked to take boots or something with us. Because I have a feeling we walked round it. And that... I think there was a sort of raised... was there... might have been a wall that people could walk on, but I don't think we... I think we went down onto the site somehow, and I have a feeling we were told to take wellies or something with us, you know.
All that sounds very, very feasible and very likely.
As I say, Dr. Grimes is no longer with us, and there's nobody to verify this, but this is my sort of vague memory.
No, that it sounds like it makes a lot of sense. And so you would have gone during the working week, so you went during your working day.
Yes.
So it was a bit of a jolly, an outing.
Yes.
Lovely.
Any excuse. We used to have a site in East London somewhere, which was an old synagogue, which was the storage area for all the storage. All the boxes for all our departments at the palace were kept there. And so it was a very good excuse for some of us to go down there and have lunch out. There was a lot of fun working in the days. It's changed now, but it was fun.
Sounds great. You said at the time there wasn't much interest in archaeology. Did you mean in terms of the nation as a whole?
I wouldn't say nation, but I just, now looking back, realise that we're all of us much more interested in things. I won't say that. But I do think people, because of television, I think it's brought it home to people, whereas there was only newspapers and radio then. And I don't seem to remember people saying, oh, you know, you've seen the Mithras Temple. I don't remember that. And I think it was a sort of, not a secret society, but academic. I think it was an academic thing. And therefore, perhaps because I worked in a museum, it came home to me, whereas if I'd been in an office job, it would have meant nothing.
So having said that, were you aware at the time about the public interest and how many people were flocking to see the site?
I think we were all very much close together. I think we were sort of fascinated that people were interested, but I think they were city people. I don't know about people coming in from the suburbs. I think they were probably city people who knew the buildings around there and perhaps had worked around there during the bombing or something even. I don't think my father went there. No, I don't think he was interested in it. But as I say, I just had the feeling now, looking back, that people weren't as sort of interested because it was almost secretive. When they found the pyramids, I think that brought public interest. But again, probably a specialised interest. People who like history, those sort of people. But as I say, I had a feeling that the crowds were probably city people in those days. I don't know I don't know anybody who ever went to it. You probably have come across some of them, so you'd know. But as I say, I just never felt... And later on, I've mentioned things about it. Something's come up. And I say, oh, yes, I saw it. Oh, like that. And they don't know really what you're talking about. So, as I say, I think it is television has brought it home to people with that man, what's his name? Tony Robertson? Robertson, who does the sort of things and the digs, and I think it fascinates people.
And what about for yourself over the years? Did your visit to the site trigger more of an interest in history and archaeology?
No, I'll be honest, because when I was very young, I started, the only thing I wanted to do was design costumes. And that meant history. So I've always been interested in history, and I still am. So sort of, I think one absorbs it over your lifetime. And it fascinated me. I loved working at the museum and handling things. I mean, mainly costume, of course, but it was fascinating to me. And I loved, you know, I had to leave because my health suffered there. But the palace, it was damp.
So you had... an interest, or you have had, and you continue to have an interest in history in terms of I suppose, almost social history, if we're looking at what people were wearing and things like that.
You should sit with me watching a period play on television. You'd go berserk. Picking. Half the things I don't watch.
It's too frustrating for you.
Oh, Downton Abbey is the only one. And also, I know the man who makes the costumes. But that's not the point. It's still very, very accurate. And though I didn't live in those periods, you get the feeling for them. I have a terrible tale I'll tell you some after this is over about me picking.
Okay. So we were talking before we started recording about the fact that the temple remains were dismantled and moved, and you weren't aware of that at the time.
No, I knew that something was happening, but you see, when did I leave the museum? 55. And after that, I was doing other sorts of jobs, and I was still in contact with Arthur Trotman and some of the people there, but I wasn't so in, sort of, I, being young, you've got other interests, boyfriends and going to parties, and I think this probably was, you know, I lost interest, but then again, you pick it up again if you're interested, you know, something came up, not so, I think when we were there, I've passed something and I said, well, I wonder if this is where Mithras was, you know, and that sort of brought it up again. So, as I say, I'd lost it and then you find things again. But it was fascinating, not that I'm interested in Roman history, really.
And you said you can't remember how you got there on the day, but you think you perhaps had to take wellies. Can you remember anything about the weather or what you were wearing apart from possibly the boots?
No, I can't. Probably if it was wet, as I say, I can't even remember what time of year it was, to be honest.
Well, it was September.
September, we probably had overcoats and wellies, mm-hmm. You know. I don't know whether you had minibuses in those days, or we went back, because there was something, tubes came into this somehow, and I have a feeling, now you're talking about it, that perhaps we went from Kensington by tube, because it would have been Ken High Street. And whether, I'm trying to think of the station, could have gone to the Barbican station, which still exists. And maybe we got that and walked to where the site was. But I honestly don't know. As I say, that's a detail. Come on, 60 years.
That's fine. What can you remember about Grimes? Can you remember anything?
Oh, he was a sweetheart. He was a really nice man, very academic looking and rather long hair. And the man I worked for, Martin Holmes, said that he didn't think I'd have got on with Mortimer Wheeler.
What made him say that?
I think my personality. I wouldn't have stood for him because he did fancy himself a bit Mortimer Wheeler. And I had no patience with, even then, no patience with vain people because he thought he was God. I always got this sort of thing from the others, you know. But called him Mr. Grimes or something.
I think he was Mr. Grimes then.
That's possible. That's it. I did see him afterwards. You know, I went back occasionally to see them, you know, as one did. Particularly when I was at the BBC, because I used it for reference and oddments and that. And just to see them again, because I liked them all. There was a young woman called Davina. Have you come across a girl called Davina, who was Grimes's secretary?
Okay.
Or one of them. Mm-hmm. She worked for, can't remember whether she was his. There was another one, I can't remember them all, you know you can't. And she was, I think she was a little bit younger than I was. But whether she's still with us, she was I suppose 15 years ago I met her. Mm. At a do at the museum that we had. But I haven't heard from her since. Davina Fenimore.
Okay, that's great. Well, I'll try and do some research and see if she's still around.
She might be, and I can't remember whether she was Grimes Museum or some, you know, secretary, because there was a room in the palace where several of them worked. And you can't remember everybody.
No.
I mean, I've not done badly. I scribbled everything out.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Then Martin Holmes, who was the curate, looked after the costume collection, basically, and other bits. He was a tricky gentleman. And in those days, a gay wasn't, it didn't admit it. Nowadays, I think he'd have been arrested. He was very nice to me, and he always called me, all the 3 years I was there, Miss Benjamin. Everybody else, even Dr. Grimes, called me Lisa. Anyhow, when I left and went to the BBC, I used to go and see him occasionally, and then I became Lisa, which I thought was very funny. I think it was because I was no longer employed there, he could relax.
Possibly, yeah.
But as I say, I don't know whether you'd like to know how I got the job.
At the museum? Mm. Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Sheer chance. We had a neighbour next door but one that had known my mother when she was on the stage, because this lady was a great friend of Ellen Terry, who was a famous actress's daughter who had a costumier's. And this lady had a costumier's. And she encouraged me into what I wanted to do. And I was at art college at the time, and my headmaster knew I'd never pass an exam in my life, because he didn't believe in them anyhow, fortunately. Anyhow, one day he came up to the classroom and said, Lisa, I need to talk to you. My mother was on the phone, and I thought, no. And he said, oh, your mother wants to talk to you. It's about a job. Well, I hadn't even thought of working. And I said, oh, yes. So he said, I'm going to ring her back, because it took too long, you know, and that. So he told me all about it, and then he rang her, and he said he'd got me there. And she said, oh, Miss Errol had said that there was a job at the Kensington Palace Museum, you see, and that I could go for an interview. Anyhow, so it was decided, and he said to me, I think if you get this job, it'll be the best thing you can do. It'll start you on the road that you want to be on. So, right, so I come home. And the interview had been arranged without me, my mother at the museum. So I go along for the interview, and they said, oh yes, and they knew I was still at art school, and they said, oh yes, so that's etc. We can't, you know, we have to do this formally because it had to be advertised. But you've got the job, and don't take any notice of the advertisements. So eventually, about 10 days later, I get a letter to say that I must start on a certain date, which was a Monday. I left school on the Friday and started work on Monday.
How old were you?
18.
Oh, no. What a wonderful start. That was fantastic.
Couldn't
wasn't
have
it?
Been better.
Yeah.
Oh, it was lovely. I loved it.
So that would have been 52?
It was the year of the Queen Mary died 3 days after I went there. So, because we had Martin Holmes used to come downstairs 3 at a time. And we'd always hear him, so whatever we were doing that was illegal was pushed away. And he said, Miss Benjamin, we can now put Her Majesty's shoes with her dresses on show. We weren't allowed to while she was alive because she thought she had big feet. I think they were probably average, you know, to us.
God, oh,
we had fun.
Amazing.
We had such fun there. Actually, he had a concealed sense of humour, really. But as I say, then we sort of dealt, and of course they had a little bit of archaeology there, and of course the Cheapside hoard, which was really archaeological. I was reading in an article I'd torn out about how it was found by two workmen who'd hidden it, a broken casket or something. But as I say, no, the whole thing was of interest, you know, it wasn't a big museum like the Barbican. It was in certain rooms in the palace. And therefore you saw everything, and you sort of were a little bit involved, and if they were cleaning out a case, you were called in to help, though it wasn't your job, you know. Everybody, you didn't have unions.
So it had an informality, which
yes,
meant you
yes.
got perhaps more familiar with some of the
yes,
objects.
Yes,
the
yes, I think one did, you know. You wouldn't do that now, of course. Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, well, when we went back as volunteers, we only did our paper cutting, you know. Which we enjoyed, because we all decided at one lunchtime when we were having one here that it wasn't really the job, it was the social side that we went in for. But it was funny to go back there.
And when was that? When did you go back to volunteer?
Must have been about 94, because I retired in 91. And it must have been about 94. And we were there until, let me think, 6 years ago when I had a heart operation.
And oh, so you, for a long time then you were volunteering?
We were there about 8 years, I would think, probably 6-8 years.
And you were cutting out newspaper?
Yes, to do with costume.
Yeah.
And filing it, whether it's still there, I don't know. And we had a part of it, we had a social thing with lectures and that called the Friends of Fashion there, which doesn't exist now once we gave up, where you had a monthly meeting, you know, the usual thing, which was great fun. You know, we enjoyed it. We had people we didn't like, but still, what association didn't?
So, going back to how you feel our society and culture has embraced archaeology more over the years and the role of television, have there been any history or archaeology programmes that you've followed, other than, I know you've talked about...
Not many, because I don't find the delivery all that interesting. A lot of them, that I think, oh, Lord, I've heard all that before. And I think if you've always sort of dabbled, shall I put it that way, dabbled in, I was just reading a thing that Buckingham Palace had sent me today, and they're going to have an exhibition of Vermeer next year. Now that I'm going to be in the queue for, because I adore Vermeer. But my real interest in history started around 1600s, after Queen Elizabeth. That's when I began to get more interested. I think because the costumes got simpler.
So what with your own sort of personal interest in history and the era and the sort of angle and the fact that you weren't keen on Mortimer Wheeler, you didn't watch his television programmes then?
I think I did, probably. I think I did, because in those days my father was alive and probably he watched them, so we only had one television, as you know, black and white, and so everybody had to watch it, you know. And he was fascinating to watch on television, I must say. It was just what I heard about his personality off TV, you know. And as I say, he did make things interesting, I remember. You know, there was a sort of... He was really a frustrated actor, I think now, because he put on a performance which made it interesting. And this is what you need in these things. You need somebody who can put on a show that may not be all that accurate, but makes people want to know more. And I think a lot of the people who do history programmes, I'm afraid, don't make me want to watch, because I feel they're too academic.
So if you were devising a history programme and you really wanted to draw in young people, what message or what means would you use, do you think?
Well, I wouldn't use video. We used to use slides. No, I did use to lecture at one time, and I lectured in America. And I always said, the thing is, you've got to do it for yourself. If you're not interested, don't waste time. Do something you are interested in, and you will find it comes back, you know, you'll get interest on it. And this is what I did. And my lectures used to be sort of interacting all the time with people asking questions, making comments as I did it. And I found it was they reacted better, because I couldn't do it from notes. I couldn't do it from a script. And the Costume Society, which I belong to, has just had a day's lectures on the First World War. And I think the Americans are the worst lecturers. We had two young women. They had one tone of voice and they were reading. And the gentleman I was sitting next to, I knew, he said he nearly went to sleep. And I said, yes, there's no inflection on their voices, and that's terribly important. And the fact they were reading line by line, they didn't even say, oh, you know, something breaking it up, whereas the English people did. And apparently, I was told that nowadays they have to read from notes. Okay. You wouldn't know, but this is what they told me. I said, well, it makes it very boring. One young woman would have been, the subject was extremely interesting, but she made it boring. And she was, as I say, and I seem to remember when I did go over to the States and went on lecture things, some of the other lecturers were very boring. Again, the flat tone of voice makes a difference. And they don't always, as my mother used to say, having been in the theatre, project their voices to the back of the gallery.
Well, if we could... just go back to the Temple of Mithras for a moment, because I think we're probably coming to the end. So
yes.
I was just thinking if there's anything that I've missed or anything that you want to add.
Do you know, it was most peculiar. When you said the head, I didn't remember the head. I had back in my mind, it was a body. was a little figure. I kept thinking, this is odd. I can remember figures or a figure. I remember the head vaguely, but the figures seemed to make a bigger impression. As yeah. I say, that's what I remembered more than the head, though I'd yeah. seen the head. Because the head, you say, is on show somewhere at the museum.
Yes, it is.
Probably
yes.
saw it when we were there, you know, when we were there. Mm. But as I say, it's funny what you sort of remember, and then you're not sure that you've got the right memory. But as I say, no, it was great fun, and as I say, it was a nice afternoon or morning off work.
And anything about being on the actual site? You talked about it being kind of dirty.
Yes.
Did you have any sense of history while you were there?
No, I had more of a sense of feeling it was like a bomb site, which it was, of course. And having, well, we moved to Twickenham for the war. And of course we did see, we had the odd bomb sites there. So it probably struck me harder than the whole thing, because I remembered it and I thought, like a bomb site, you know. I remember we had to go down something, ramp or something, we had to go down, because of course it was under a building. But as I say, I just remember that we were told to take wellies or boots, and I don't know whether it was because they thought it might be wet or it was muddy there. It was something, you know, reason, and whether we used them, I don't know, you know. Things change. And I now begin to think that perhaps we did go by tube. Because I can't see them paying a taxi. Or hiring a minivan for us. I have a feeling we probably went by tube somehow. God knows how. And we must have come out at the Barbican. Because my father... We used to go to things in the evening in the city, and we always went to the Barbican station there. So it must have been that I remembered it, because it's still there, the Barbican station, isn't it?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yes, because...
Yeah.
Well,
but when was it built?
I have a feeling it was an old Metropolitan line, could have been, and therefore it was the old-fashioned tube in those days. And probably, I wonder if it was real tubes, as we know them, because we're on the Metropolitan line here, as you know, and they were more trains than the classic tube here, and they went under, what is it, Fenchurch Street, has a sort of glass arch, rather like
it's
Paddington.
Very, very shallow, isn't it, the Metropolitan
yes.
line?
Yes. Well, it's a very old line, of course, it's one
right.
of the original.
It's the earliest.
And I seem to remember that the Barbican station was similar with this, like Paddington, and the old King's Cross station with these glass canopies. Waterloo had them too, you know, and I have a feeling this was what we did. And you had steps up to the ground level from those stations. So, as I say, but they, of course, modernised everything.
Well, that's been absolutely lovely. Thank you very much.
Well, pleasure. I hope it's of some use.
Absolutely.
My vague memories, you know.